Hey, how about it, race fans? It's Richard Allen of InsideDirtRacing.com and InsideCircleTrack.com, and I'm coming at you with another edition of Rich's Ramblings. I haven't done one of these in quite a while. I've been doing the weekend podiums on a pretty regular basis each Sunday evening, but I thought I would come at you with another one of these, and today I'm going to talk about a recent kind of disturbing trend that we're starting to see in dirt late model racing and in all racing in general. I'm going to talk about how the cost of this sport is running some folks who have been in it for a while out of the sport. And I think it's something we need to all be alarmed about. Earlier this week, if you check the content on InsideDirtRacing.com on a regular basis, you've probably already seen it, but the Blunt Motorsports team, owned by Larry Garner out of Maryville, Tennessee, has decided to close its doors after operating for 15 years and 15 very successful years. They've won a number of feature races, track championships, series championships with the Southern Nationals and also in the Spring Nationals. Had some great drivers, had Tommy Kerr drive for him for a while, or actually for the entire time, as he is a part owner. And then Billy Ogle Jr. drove for him for a while. Casey Roberts was behind the wheel for a while. And then a couple of different stints, they had Donald McIntosh, who was perhaps their most successful driver in winning a Southern National Championship and a couple of Spring Nationals titles as well. So it's alarming that a team that's had so much success at the regional level has had to close up shop. And as Larry Garner said, and if you'll check the article on InsideDirtRacing.com, Garner points out that it's just simply the rising cost that a team such as his, a regionally based team that doesn't run a big national schedule, just has a great deal of difficulty competing against the teams that do run those big national schedules and have much more funding at their disposal than what his team has had. And I got to thinking, when it was announced that that team is closing down, at some of the tracks around East Tennessee, when they have bigger series races, whether it be one of the two national tours or one of the regional tours that's coming in, Blunt Motorsports always provided at least one car with McIntosh whenever there was a race at, say, a Smoky Mountain or 411, Tazewell, Volunteer, Boyd's, somewhere like that. And in some cases, they had two cars with McIntosh and Kerr both entering races. And now those would be either one or two cars that we won't see anymore, that won't be back. So car counts will be diminished as a result. And like I said, I got to thinking about that. And if you think back just a few years ago, there were some guys around East Tennessee who every time that there was any sort of a super late model race at one of those tracks that I mentioned, you could count on these guys being there. Guys like Mark Douglas, who raced for many years and had some success at it. Mark Vineyard, same story, a guy who raced for many years and had success as well. You know, Billy Ogle Jr., who I mentioned, you know, he typically drove for other people. He didn't own his own stuff most of the time, but still nonetheless, there was a guy who you could count on being at any race in East Tennessee. And also Chad Ogle, another guy who was always there. You could count on him always being there. And even, like I said, occasionally winding up on the podium or even in victory lane from time to time. But now none of those guys are around. So when you add in the Blunt Motorsports cars too, that's five, six cars that, you know, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, you could count on being there, and they're not there anymore. So it's a little bit disturbing, as we're no doubt going to see car counts drop even when the Lucas Oil Series comes to East Tennessee or the World of Outlaws. I mean, the guys that they bring with them are going to be it largely. And that's not just true in East Tennessee. That's true pretty much everywhere. You're seeing the same type things happen all over. If you look around, you know, there are some guys who race regionally that you don't see very often anymore, like a Casey Roberts or a Jason Hyatt or someone like that who don't race nearly as much as they used to. So those are more cars that you used to count on that would come to a particular track or for a particular series, but they they don't anymore. And as I've thought more about it, and I've thought this for a long time, when you look at the racing model, the economic model, I mean, it really makes no sense from any direction. If you're going to go into racing, it looks like you have to go in with a mindset of, at best, breaking even. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of people who are making money. I know a lot of fans, I hear fans talk, and they think that promoters are just rolling in money. And I can tell you from personal relationships with two or three of the promoters around this area, that is not true. There are more races than not in which they are losing money when they open their gate. They've just got to hope that for those two or three bigger events that they'll make enough to make up for those losses. And I promise you that's true, because they, you know, I don't look at the books of any of these tracks, but they have no reason to lie about it, I don't think. And then you look at it from the point of view of the teams and the drivers, there's not a lot of economic sense there as well. I mean, they're racing for purses, the same purses essentially raced for 20 years ago, but the prices have skyrocketed. I mean, a set of shocks is, you know, highly expensive. Engines, some of them are reaching the $40,000 and $50,000 range, as well as, you know, just all the other pieces and parts and the hauler you got to have to get there, and the price of the fuel to go into that hauler, and crew help and all this. You know, the prices are skyrocketing and the purses are not. So they're certainly not making any money either. So from all directions, the way I see it, this is not a financial boon for anyone. Now, of course, there are sponsors that help out and that, which is great. It's what keeps the sport alive. So hopefully that will continue to be the case, and that some other economic model might surface that would work better. And then on top of that, when you throw in our current state of affairs, all the shortages going around of different pieces and parts and all that, that's not helping anything. The tire, you know, they're, as well documented, there's a tire shortage, which leaves teams having to essentially scrape the bottom of the barrel for tires, and the series having to impose strict limits on how many tires can be used. So that's not helping anything. And of course, whenever you have a shortage, you have a price increase. That's just a natural way of doing it. So, you know, everybody says that the sport's going to change. You can go on message boards, you can look on social media, and everybody's always saying, well, they've got to change. Something's got to change. Well, I mean, what is it? If you say, okay, we can change, we can help the teams by raising the purses. Well, if you raise the purses, like I said before, I promise you the promoters are not making money hand over fist. And they're simply not going to just say, okay, well, let's just eat some more losses here and raise the purses to help the teams. Obviously, if a purse is raised, the ticket price is going to be raised, because they've got to have a chance to recoup their money, at least to try and break even, maybe make a little bit. So just simply throwing out there, well, let's just raise the purses. Well, that's going to have a side effect somewhere. It's not going to be just, hey, we kicked in another $10,000 or $20,000 a purse. You know, sorry, promoter, you're just going to lose that. And we want ticket prices, by the way, to stay the same. I mean, that can't happen. It just can't possibly happen. On the other end of it, people talk about reducing costs. Well, we got to do stuff to reduce costs on this, that, and the other. That's virtually undoable in racing. If you think about it, if you restrict one thing, you say, okay, we're going to put limitations on the engines, or we're going to put limitations on the tires, or whatever. You're going to impose some kind of limitation that's going to help reduce costs. These people that work on these cars are smart. And they also, at the same time, not only are they smart, they want to win. They want to find whatever competitive advantage they can. So if you put a restriction on one part of the car, they're just going to go to another part and find another way to find an advantage somewhere. And when you find advantages, it costs money. That's just the bottom line. So you can impose all the restrictions you want, there's still going to be costs. I mean, look at it. Several years ago, people touted Crate Lake model racing. It was going to save racing because it's going to cut down so much on the costs. Well, when people couldn't invest large amounts of money on engines, they just went to shocks or they went someplace else where they could find some sort of an advantage. And now, you know, it costs a lot of money to run a competitive crate car. Well, that would be true on anything. So there, and on top of that, there's always going to be a few who will have the money to spend to do whatever it takes to win. You know, there may not be many, but if you look at guys who run the Lucas Oil Series, or you look at guys who run the World Outlaws Series, or even some of the top regional teams, some of those teams are owned by people who have tremendous amounts of money. And so they want to win. And so they're going to spend the money to win. And they'll tell their crew guys, they'll have an engineer, they'll even go to wind tunnels and stuff like that to spend more money to find some sort of an advantage. So there's not an instance where you can look and say, well, here's where we can cut costs. You may cut costs in that one area, but then you're going to raise costs someplace else. And the teams, that every time you institute some sort of a restriction, I mean, look at NASCAR. NASCAR provides a great example of this. NASCAR will impose some sort of a rule that will say, okay, we're going to make some sort of strict restriction right here that'll cut costs. Every time that happens, the big teams like Joe Gibbs Racing or Penske or Hendrick Motorsports or somebody like that, all of a sudden starts dominating everything because they've got a team of engineers who can work inside that really small box you put them in to find some sort of an advantage in that small box, where a smaller team doesn't have that team of engineers that can look for those advantages. And, you know, I know a lot of people out there like, well, you can go back to trial and error. Trial and error's days are dead in racing. They ain't coming back. Racers nowadays use much more sophisticated than ideas than, hey, let's just bolt this on and see if it works. Those days are dead. And so that's not going to do it either. Well, another possibility, how about more spec parts or spec cars or something of that nature? On the asphalt side, the Cars Tour is kind of going in this direction where next year, Cars is not even going to sanction super late models. They've had some super late model races this year with single-digit numbers of cars or very, very low-teen number of cars in super late models. So next year, they're replacing their super late model division with a pro late model division. So who knows? I know everybody's in love with the idea of super late models, but a lot of the team owners are not in love with the idea of losing their shirts every time that they hit the road with that hauler to haul all the way to, you know, Minnesota or Nebraska or somewhere like that, only to get rained out and wind up not making a penny. So there may be some sort of changes like that too. Could it be that super late model racing will just devolve into only the national tours and maybe just one or two very specialized regional tours that are able to survive, like say the Summer Nationals and something like that might be able to hold on? Otherwise, maybe, you know, a bunch of unsanctioned super late model races that, you know, pay some purse or whatever and try to work their way around the national tours or something like that. There's a time that has come, and it's time to start trying to figure something out. Obviously, as you can tell by listening to me, I don't know what those solutions are. I'm just throwing things out there that I'm telling you all the stuff that can't work. Somebody's got to find the thing that can work. And that's, you know, that's a hard job, whoever's faced with that. But that said, it is time for late model racing to start looking in that direction to find whatever it is that can work. Because, as I said at the open, the Blunt Motorsports closing down ought to serve as a wake-up call if you hadn't already been awakened that dirt late model racing needs to institute some sort of changes if it's going to survive in its current form. But anyway, I appreciate you taking the time to listen. I appreciate you taking the time to check out our articles and photos and the things like that that Michael Motes and myself put on InsideDirtRacing.com. And also, if you're a NASCAR or pavement fan, we appreciate you giving a look at Inside Circle Track as well. But for now, and I hope that I can do maybe a few more of these ramblings, I felt like this topic was better addressed this way than trying to write a story, which could have gone on for quite some time. So I appreciate you giving it a listen, and hopefully there will be a few more of these in the near future. I hope you have a great rest of your day and a great rest of the week, and I will see you at the racetrack.